us, and are not necessarily those of IR and its advertisers or affiliates.
Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and of course, the views of our guests. Well, we're hoping against hope we're going to have our special guest with us this evening, Mr. William Grieg, who I always enjoy having with us. Right now, why we're not getting any answer from him, and I'm going to ask my producer to come in here. Let me just give the middle numbers, because I think we have it wrong. The number is 692, not 642. So if you wouldn't mind just trying that number and see if that one works any better, and we'll see if we can get William on. If not, we're going to have a good time with open lines tonight. But there's so many things to talk about, so many things that are actually going on in the world today. Certainly, as we look at what's happening economically, why we see we're having real problems. Certainly, they're probably $1.5 trillion worth of non-performing loans out there. And, of course, so we've not only had them here in the United States, where it's estimated that Citibank alone, which is the largest bank in the United States, has over $80 billion in non-performing collateralized debt obligations, or these problems that we have as far as these debt obligations, and all over the world, why the various financial institutions have. Anyway, I'm sorry. Well, anyway, we're going to have open lines, I guess. So give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, or perhaps we can actually go ahead and call our 9 o'clock guest. We'll put him on now, and maybe we'll be able to get our 8 o'clock guest at 9 o'clock. I think that's what we'll try to do. So, under any circumstances, if you'd like to give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, why, give us a call. But right now, we can just start talking a little bit about what's happening financially. I don't know if you've been watching the price of gold, but it was actually up to over $88 a day or so ago. It's $86 or $87 today. $87 a barrel. When George Bush became the President of the United States, oil was $20 a barrel, and now it's about $87 a barrel. Now, do you honestly believe that when the government tells you that the inflation rate is 2.1%, that's 2.1%, do you honestly believe that is accurate? And of course, the truth of the matter is, it is not accurate, and the great tragedy is that we have a situation where the government is lying about the rate of inflation. The rate of inflation in the United States today is about 11%. The price of milk has gone up 50% here in the last year or so, and certainly the price of eggs has doubled, and the price of meat has doubled, and the price of corn has doubled, and yet they're trying to tell us there's only 2.1% inflation. Now, the reason that they do that, the reason the government lies, is because, according to the law, why Social Security is to be linked to inflation. And so if there's inflation, so that the elderly people are not robbed of the value of their pension, why, of course, they're supposed to get a raise every year according to inflation. Well, of course, if they were being honest, they'd have to give the average American who's retired an 11% increase, and they don't want to do that because they don't have the money. So they simply lie, and they say the core inflation rate is 2.1%, and we're very generously going to give you an increase of 2.1%. And the great tragedy is, of course, that every year, why the elderly and the retired go further and further behind, because inflation is simply a means of stealing from the citizens of our country, and that's exactly what they're doing today. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and so we're simply talking about the inflation that's taking place today, and the government is not really being honest with us at all. What you must understand is the whole world is on a fiat money system. Now, here in the United States, M3, which is the increase in credit, is running about 14%, and actually worldwide it's running about 14%. In other words, all the countries of the world are expanding their money and their credit. I mean, you get on into places like China, they're expanding their money supply 30% a year. You get into Russia, they're expanding their money supply 60% a year. And it's producing tremendous prosperity. All you have to do is print money, and of course, as long as it's exchangeable for goods, and why, you can keep buying more and more because you've got all this new money, and that's what always happens in a fiat money system. The problem is, eventually, of course, why you keep having to print more and more money just to keep the economy going, and you end up, as they are in Zimbabwe today, where they have about 20,000% a year inflation. In fact, those people who have a pension, a fund that they're entitled to, the money that they get from their pension will buy about, well, for a month, will buy about 3 slices of bread for the entire month. And this is the end result of what happens. And this seems to be the direction that the whole world is headed at the present time, because sooner or later this whole system is going to fall apart. I mean, you're looking at China, where they're increasing the amount of money about 30% a year, and China is just booming. After all, if we could give everybody in the United States $10,000, think how great the economy would be for a while, until, of course, people had been spending that money, and then pretty soon prices would have to rise to, because it became shortages, and to keep people from buying everything off the shelves, the prices would eventually go up, and eventually everything would equalize, and then the economy would begin to slow down, so we'd have to give everybody another $10,000. And in essence, in many respects, this is what we're doing today. Many of our banks are having real financial problems because they bought all sorts of these collateralized debt obligations that have no intrinsic value. And so to get around that, the government is beginning to pour out all sorts of money, just creating new money out of nothing so they can lend to the banks to keep them from collapsing. And they'd be far better off, of course, to let the banks collapse than to destroy the value of our currency, which is exactly what the Federal Reserve System is doing. Instead of raising the interest rates to stabilize our currency, they keep lowering them and creating more and more money and credit, which, of course, will eventually result in hyperinflation. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and certainly if you have a question or comment, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And of course, as we look and see what's happening, while they're telling us how great the economy is, how the economy is booming, and yet more and more people are losing their jobs. They're losing their jobs in the building industry. They're losing their jobs in the financial industry. They're losing their jobs in the automotive industry. There are no more jobs in the textile industry or the furniture building industry, or certainly, and even many of the jobs in electronics are being transferred to India. They're being transferred to China, and of course to other countries throughout the world. And right now, even if you're an architect, you're not sure that they can't transfer your job to India. If you're an engineer, why, they can transfer your jobs to India. Even some legal work is being done in India because it can be done there so much more cheaply. And more people are coming under pressure economically. And yet, of course, the media, the controlled media, keeps telling us how great things are in America. But our living standard is gradually going down. Your dollar, of course, is falling in value. And, well, right now we've got William Grigg on the line, so let's go to William. And he always has fascinating things to talk about, and we always enjoy having him. William, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
Dr. Dan, it's great to be with you.
Well, what are the issues you'd like to talk about this evening?
For what would be, I think, an entire change of pace, I'd like to start by talking about something very positive.
All right, fine.
I'm very enthusiastic about this development. Just a few days ago, Ron Paul, who's the only member of Congress of either party who seems to remember that he took an oath to defend the Constitution, introduced a bill, H.R. 3835, entitled the American Freedom Agenda Act of 2007. And the stated purpose of that measure is to restore the Constitution's checks and balances and protections against government abuses as envisioned by the Founding Fathers. And the section dealing with the statement of findings and purpose of the bill enumerates some, by no means all, but some of the most salient abuses that have been institutionalized during the reign of George W. Bush and his adult handlers. Such things, for instance, as extraordinary rendition, the use of torture, and other means of forced interrogation and forced confession, the arbitrary executive designation of U.S. citizens as enemy combatants who are outside the protection of the law, the creation of military commissions that are spurious bodies outside the Article III framework of the judicial system created by the Constitution, the use of illegal wiretaps and other electronic surveillance, all these things, the evisceration of habeas corpus, and point by point by point, this measure goes through and, if enacted, would reinstate the constitutional protections for individuals and reinstate the checks and balances intended to prevent the abuse from being codified.
Now, what is the number of that bill?
H.R. 3835. It's entitled the American Freedom Agenda Act of 2007. If your listeners go to the RightSource website, RightSourceOnline.com, once again, that's RightSourceOnline.com, right now the top news item deals with this measure introduced by Ron Paul. And also, we sent out an email alert this evening. If you go over to the Right Action side of the website, that's on the left-hand side of the page. If you're looking at the screen, the left-hand side of the page, there's a photograph of my associate, Tom Edlam. And under the Right Action, there are a number of items that have to do with legislative matters and other agenda items that people can follow and actions they can take to do something substantive in defense of liberty. The top item under the heading, the Right Action, is the link to the email alert that we send out asking people to call, write, fax, semaphore, somehow to get in touch with their representative in the House of Representatives and browbeat that person into supporting this bill, to co-sponsor the bill, to support the bill. And the idea here is that you're dealing with one of these shibboleth-sibboleth-type litmus tests as to what is really going on inside of an elected representative. A few years ago, before the Iraq War broke out, Representative Paul introduced a resolution to declare war on Iraq. He voted against that resolution in the House Armed Services Committee because he didn't think that we should go to war against Iraq. But he said people need to be on record as to whether or not they believe that Iraq is a belligerent against whom the people of the United States should declare war through the House of Representatives, as designated by the Constitution as the only legitimate way that our country can be committed to a war. That measure didn't get out of committee, and so that was a useful exercise in the sense that it validated and reaffirmed the sole exclusive power of Congress to declare war against another country, first of all, and secondly, it puts Congress on record as not declaring war against Iraq, meaning the war itself is illegal. This measure by Ron Paul would be a consummate repeal of the Bush executive dictatorship that has been established over the last 6 years. It's not going to pass Congress in all probability, but there is something useful, not only in terms of taking a moral position for the purpose of history and posterity, but also by way of educating the public about what Congress can do in supporting this measure. And
you know, I really think this is so important because I don't think most people understand that most of what you're speaking of, it all ties back into the Military Commissions Act. And the idea is here that basically we were certainly going to ignore the Geneva Convention. We were certainly going to allow torture of individuals. We were going to set up military commissions that could declare any person a terrorist. And certainly you or I could be considered a terrorist. And once we were actually thrown into prison, even though we might very well be an American citizen, why we would not have the right to habeas corpus. Now, of course, they would always say, but, oh, of course, this does not include American citizens. But how would you ever prove you're an American citizen? Because part of this legislation said that no judge or no judicial body could challenge this. In other words, you were in prison, you said, I'm an American citizen, I have the right to habeas corpus, and they would say, but the judge cannot intervene in your behalf. This was the most frightening piece of legislation. That's the Military Commission Act. Most people have never even heard of it. October 2006. And yet it really, more than anything else, was that I have ever seen, other than perhaps the latest problem here at May 9th with a National Security and Homeland Security Directives laying the foundation for a dictatorship in America. I think it's a great piece of legislation.
Oh, it's, I think, an unprecedented opportunity here, because we live in unprecedented times. Apart from some of the really bad things that happened during the depth of the Alien and Sedition Acts of the 1790s, during an understandable scare over the French Revolution, where you had the government outlawing criticism of the government, the same type of thing happened during World War One, where the Espionage Act was used to punish people who would do such things as, for instance, read the Declaration of Independence as part of an anti-war rally. We've never reached a point where these things were being codified and institutionalized to the extent that they are today. And so because we confront an unprecedented threat, and because the momentum on behalf of full-fledged executive dictatorship is so pronounced, it's nothing less than a world historic act of courage and principle for Ron Paul to submit this bill that, if nothing else, would put people in the House of Representatives on record as to whether they support the Constitution or whether they support executive dictatorship. It's really quite simple. It's that cut and dried. We are dealing with something that is an utter binary proposition. The dichotomy is firm and clearly defined. You either support the Constitution or you support executive dictatorship. And I sincerely doubt that the Republicans would support this. There might be elements of the Democratic Party who will support this. The Democratic leadership, of course, for its own reasons, most of which have to do with the venality and power lust of everybody who goes into politics, with conspicuous exceptions and worthy exceptions like Ron Paul, the Democratic leadership probably wouldn't support it as well, because I think they covertly right now, but in an increasingly obvious way, lust to inherit on January 20th, 2009, the sprawling apparatus of coercion and social regimentation and surveillance that the Bush administration has put into place. They don't want to do anything to damage that instrument. As a matter of fact, they want to embellish it considerably. And so I don't think that the Democratic congressional leadership, Nancy Pelosi obviously, is not going to be somebody who's going to be eager to see this bill make it out of committee and make it onto the House floor. But I believe there might be enough people in the Democratic caucuses who want to commit some mischief at the expense of the Republicans that they might be interested in supporting this, simply as a way of making a point about what's going on under the reign of the Republicans. Look, I'll take that as a motivation if this will help propel this bill onto the House floor and get people to make an up or down vote as to whether they stand with the dear leader or whether they stand with the Constitution.
Well, of course, it will have to be voted on within the committee.
Committee, first of all, yes.
And, of course, that will be a very interesting vote to see if the head of the Republicans, you know, who traditionally have always supported liberty, but, of course, under the current circumstances, with the current leadership, are voting, you know, repeatedly for the implementation of a fascist society.
Yeah.
Do they have the courage to stand against the executive branch of government, which certainly wants to do away with the right of habeas corpus, wants to do away with any of the privacy laws that we have in the Fourth and Fifth Amendment, but of all things, the fact that they would support torture and do away with the restrictions, you know, or I should say, the protections of the Geneva Convention. That, to me, is really rather frightening.
Yeah.
I think this is a great idea that Ron has, and I applaud him for putting this forward at this time in history, because it's going to be a very, 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 very important issue to see who has the courage to stand for the Constitution and freedom, and who, as you say, wants to go along with a move towards the planned dictatorship.
Yes, I think that this is the best news I've heard in a long, long time, and Ron Paul's visibility, for instance, he's going to be on the Tonight Show in a couple of weeks, is just the ticket, I think, for bringing this to the attention of people who otherwise might ignore it.
And I don't think most people really understand the implications of the Military Commission Act, the John Wagner Defense Appropriations Act, legislation that was enacted here in May of this year, the Homeland Security and the National Security Presidential Directives. Well, we better tell them.
You know, one of the things that's happening with the Ron Paul campaign right now, and as Ron Paul consistently says, this is not about him. He goes out of his way to emphasize that he's not trying to build a cult of...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mined supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency, and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
so many of the things that have been enacted in recent years aimed at creating a dictatorship in America. People say it could never happen here, and I would say, why not? Our founding fathers certainly feared it. In fact, Thomas Jefferson said, one of his most famous statements, in matters of politics, speak not to be of confidence in men, but bind them down for mischief with the chains of the Constitution. Well, unfortunately, we've forgotten that. We seem to think that you can trust men. Certainly our founding fathers didn't trust anybody. That's why they wanted to limit the power of the central government. But now, of course, supposedly because we're threatened by a man living over in a cave somewhere in Pakistan, why, we've got to give up our freedom. Because if we don't give up our freedom to our government, why this wicked man over in Pakistan is going to take away our freedom, and that's why we've got to have the suspension of the right of habeas corpus, the ability, of course, the government to spy on every American, because who among us might not be a terrorist? I mean, after all, anybody who, of course, wants to change our form of government is a potential terrorist, according to the Patriot Act, but unfortunately, that would include most of the people in the current government, because most of them, or many of them, are globalists, and they really do want to do away with our Constitution and merge us with other countries. So who is the real terrorist? I believe those who have a different agenda, who want to do away with our constitutional guarantees of individual freedom under God and have the all-powerful state. To me, that it would certainly fulfill the Patriot Act definition of terrorism, but I dare say there will very few of the people in the executive branch of government who are doing everything they can to destroy the Constitution will be arrested and tried for treason. Go ahead, William.
Well, one of the things that we've discussed before is this myth of the omnipotent troglodyte, which is the idea that somehow Osama bin Laden, rather like Fu Manchu in early 20th century pulp novels, exercises these grand and all-encompassing powers of subversion and terror, and that unless we cling to the benevolent plenipotentiary who rules over us, the grand and glorious decider, the commander guy, I can't remember how many different juvenile descriptions Mr. Bush has given of himself, but unless we cling to him and support him and defer to his every whim, that this omnipotent troglodyte, this cave dweller by the name of Osama bin Laden, is going to send his minions to kill us in our homes. And if we undermine in any way the powers of George W. Bush, the terror will spontaneously erupt in the streets of the United States. Of course, it's the purest driven nonsense. That's something that's described here in elusive ways in the text of this measure, H.R. 3835, the American Freedom Agenda Act of 2007. One of the points that is made here under the findings section is that, and I'm quoting here, checks and balances make the nation safer by preventing abuses that would be exploited by al-Qaeda to boost terrorist recruitment, would deter foreign governments from cooperating and defeating international terrorism, and would make the American people reluctant to support aggressive counterterrorism measures. Now, when they talk about aggressive counterterrorism measures in the text of this bill, obviously what they're talking about would be effective and constitutionally appropriate action taken by police agencies and intelligence agencies. Primarily, of course, the military should be involved in intelligence, although the State Department has a role in that respect as well. But there are things that can be done in a perfectly suitable and constitutional fashion to find out what is being planned by the legitimate enemies of our country and our society. Whereas if you have grand overreaching by the federal government, which, of course, is its preferred mode of operations, you end up with a situation where the chief objective of terrorism, which is a change in the political structure of our society, is being accomplished. That's the entire purpose of terrorism. And that's why David Addington, the former chief of staff of Vice President Dick Cheney, I believe should be put on trial or at least interrogated, investigated by the appropriate agencies for comments he made back in 2004 about the possibility of a bombing resulting in the abolition of the FISA court, the Federal Intelligence Surveillance Act court, that can issue wiretap warrants for the purpose of investigating suspected terrorists who are in the United States. The FISA court will issue warrants after the fact, which is something I don't think is a good idea, but even that very generous provision of the FISA law was ignored by President Bush. He said that he didn't need the permission of the court in order to conduct warrantless surveillance of all electronic communications
You know, I think the most amazing thing is, of course, if anybody's studying what's really going on with world terrorism, so much of it is being funded by Saudi Arabia and by Pakistan, and we're funding both Pakistan and Saudi Arabia. Why would we be funding the Saudi Arabians who are funding terrorism throughout the world? And, of course, they're in the madras schools right here in the United States, training young people up to be terrorists. Why would we be doing that? Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is William Grigg, and we're talking, certainly, about this wonderful piece of legislation, House Resolution 3835, the American Freedom Agenda Act, which, of course, lists all of the terrible things that are going on today and how we can prevent them by simply adhering to our Constitution in an effort to preserve the freedom of the American people. And if we're willing to give up all of our freedom in the name of security, why, we are entitled neither liberty nor security. So said Benjamin Franklin, and of course it's just as true today as it was over 200 years ago. Go right ahead, William.
I made mention of David Addington, the former chief of staff for Vice President Cheney, and it was recently revealed in the memoir of a fellow who was the head of the Office of Legal Affairs at the Justice Department, that way back in 2005, I believe it was, January or February of that year, in discussions about the FISA court, Mr. Addington said that we are one body away from getting rid of that obnoxious court. The substance of that remark, to me, and that remark, by the way, has been widely reported, and David Addington has not challenged the recollection here. The substance of that remark is that Mr. Addington was actually speaking favorably of a change that the Bush administration obviously wanted to bring about. They obviously wanted to do away with the court because they were ignoring its rulings and ignoring its powers under legislation to grant warrants after the fact when a request is made for an exigent surveillance warrant of a suspected terrorist or espionage agent from a foreign country on American soil. So that's clearly a policy outcome that the Bush administration and Mr. Addington in particular favored. He was talking about the fact that as soon as there was another terrorist bombing, that court is done away with. And to my ears, to my eyes, as I read that remark, it seemed to be clear to me that Addington was hoping for a terrorist attack to accomplish that policy objective, which means that he would be, under the Patriot Act, considered a terrorist. And so I think that what is sauce for the citizen goose is sauce for the government gander. I really think that Mr. Addington ought to be brought before the relevant congressional committees, at least, and asked about that remark, and I really think that he ought to be hauled in and questioned by the FBI, at very least. That's what would happen to any American citizen who was found and documentably to have said that same kind of thing. As a matter of fact, the Patriot Act is being used for all kinds of inappropriate purposes. There's an incident in Arizona where he was a junior high school child, who was charged under the Patriot Act.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with William Grigg. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this evening is one of my favorite guests, William Grigg. And before we get on with our program, William, I want you to tell our listeners how they can, of course, get your information. Give your website one more time and how people can access the great information there.
The website, the news portal, for which I serve as editor-at-large, is called The Right Source. And the URL for that is www.rightsourceonline.com. That's one word, rightsourceonline.com. I mentioned that the top news story in our news blog is the text of an email alert that we send out to our subscribers urging them to support H.R. 3835, the American Freedom Agenda Act of 2007, and to urge their respective representatives in Congress to co-sponsor that measure. And if you look at the left-hand border of the screen when you go to the Right Source, first of all, you'll find a section that is set up by my photograph that will take you to my blog. My daily blog is called Pro Libertate. That's a Latin phrase. It means for freedom. If you look to the right side of my picture, there are two links. The furthest one to the right will take you to my daily blog. It's actually updated maybe between five and six times a week. And then below that, there's a photograph of my associate, Thomas Edlam, who's in charge of the legislative agenda of the Right Source, a project of the Welch Foundation. And under Thomas Edlam's picture, you'll find the email alert. Once again, we have it in two places in the website because I think it's that important, email alert for H.R. 3835. And once again, the address for that is www.rightsourceonline.com.
All right, very good. So let me recommend to you, if you have access to the computer, go to William's website. Fascinating material there. We try to get there several times a week just to see what the latest entries are in the blog. Well, you were simply talking a little bit about, why don't you pick up before I so rudely interrupted you?
No rudeness involved. I was talking about the fact that there was a young man of junior high school age in Maricopa County, Arizona, who was accused of pulling a knife on a female classmate, which is a pretty serious crime when you think about it. I mean, obviously, there are plenty of laws that would be applicable here having to do with assault with a deadly weapon or various forms of aggravated mischief. There's no need to charge him under the Patriot Act, but Maricopa County, Arizona, is afflicted with a pestiferous prosecutor by the name of Andrew Thomas, who is your standard-issue Republican fascist. And he is always looking for inventive ways to exacerbate the misery faced by particularly young defendants by way of browbeating them into a plea bargain that will somehow add to his luster, I guess, as a prosecutor. He's somebody who's bucking for a promotion up the ladder of what we now call the Justice Department. I don't know if the word justice applies here. But Mr. Thomas charged this young man under the Patriot Act with an act of terrorism because there is a provision in the Patriot Act that makes the commission of certain crimes on government property a form of terrorism. And the fact that this happened either on the grounds of a public school or en route to a public school, a government-operated school, in Mr. Thomas's eyes, made this something that falls under the domain of the Patriot Act. So you have little kids who are miscreants, who are badly in need of receiving a taste of the strap, pulling pen knives on their classmates, being charged with terrorism.
And this would be a state issue, it would not be
sure.
A federal issue. But
exactly.
But basically what they're trying to do is literally anything could become a federal crime,
mm-hmm.
Under the Patriot Act. And this is frightening because, of course, they will, of course, indict you for 100 different things and you either plead guilty or they'll send you to jail for the next 100 years. There
yeah.
are today in the United States 7
I know.
Million Americans either in prison, probation, or parole. That's far more in proportion of people in prison, probation, parole than they have per capita in communist China today.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they tell us this is a free nation.
Well, I've seen absolute numbers. That's more than the prison population of communist China. That's the part of the story that really leaves me pixelated, is the fact that you've got this behemoth of a nation, you know, 1.3 billion souls who live under the yoke of that government, which is, of course, operated by a party proudly claiming the mantle of Marx, Lenin, Mao, you know, the biggest mass murderers in history. Their announced objective is to bring about world communism. As a matter of fact, it was just 10 years ago or so, which is, you know, a reasonably short period of time here. It was after the supposed end of communism in 1991. I actually interviewed a member of the Communist Chinese Politburo while I was in San Francisco for a UN-related conference on family and children's rights. And I asked him about that. Is it still the objective of the Chinese Communist Party to bring about world socialism as a preliminary stage to the creation of world communism? He said, well, certainly, you know, that's why we exist. We exist to bring about world communism. And yet, even though you have this unbroken continuity now, back to Mao Zedong and the most murderous, oppressive regime in history, ruling that huge country, the entire population of the United States is a rounding error in trying to calculate the population of communist China, yet we have a larger prison population than China in both proportionate and absolute terms. And one of the reasons is because of the perverse ingenuity of people like Andrew Thomas in devising ways of sending people to prison for either nonviolent offenses or for property crimes or crimes against persons that really may not necessarily involve imprisonment, certainly not for the type of terms we're talking about right now. The use of plea bargains and other coercive techniques, I believe, plays a big role in the inflation of our prison population. the point I'm making is that this 11 or 12-year-old kid who did something that was pretty bad by any definition, that is adequately covered by state law and also probably by municipal ordinances as well, who could have been sent to juvenile detention or could have served some other type of a sentence for committing this admittedly terrible crime against a terrified female classmate, is being charged under the Patriot Act with a crime of terrorism, and yet you have here David Addington, this immensely powerful individual, who was at the time the chief of staff to Vice President Cheney, committing, according to the testimony of a former member of the Bush administration, what is, by strict statutory definition, a crime of terrorism under the Patriot Act. And Mr. Addington, of course, is comfortably ensconced in a powerful position, and I believe sleeps at night in the serene confidence that he'll serve out his term of what he calls public service and then go off to serve a more lucrative position with the K Street lobbying firm or some other position of that sort. It would be wonderful if somehow we could dragoon Mr. Addington into an interrogation by the FBI and see him stammer and sweat for a while under the provisions of the law that they're enforcing on the rest of us. And the fact that you have this complete inversion and perversion of justice here in the United States is a testimony to the complete alienation of our existing governmental apparatus from its constitutional roots. And it's why people are listening to what Ron Paul says with such eagerness and gratitude. And this is something that is transpartisan in nature, Ron Paul's support and the interest that he's generating. And it doesn't have anything to do necessarily with him, although the fact that he's a man of great composure and obvious sincerity and, I think, tangible benevolence has a lot to do with his appeal. He's obviously not enraptured with himself, goes out of his way once again to abstract himself from the importance of the message. But when you have people, for instance, like the Grammy Award-winning rock musician John Mayer, somebody in whom I had discerned not a single symptom of political maturity, talking with great passion about the fact that Ron Paul is right, we should read the Constitution. There's a video clip circulating on the Internet right now where John Mayer is in a rather impassioned shouting match with another celebrity, another television celebrity, saying, you should read the Constitution. Ron Paul has that right. The memory of man runneth not to a time when teen idol guitar players were extolling the virtues of a conservative Republican candidate because that candidate speaks the truth about our Constitution. That's a very encouraging thing. And the fact that he draws disproportionately in his supporters from among the young, you know, the college age, recent high school graduates, from the military, he leads all of the candidates in donations from active duty and retired military personnel. That says that, once again, there's something resilient in the American character here that resonates with the theme of freedom. And it's something that I had despaired about, quite frankly, before the last 6 or 8 months or so. And now we have this tangible piece of legislation before the House that would put people on record definitively in unambiguous terms as to which side they support. Do they support executive dictatorship? Do they support the Constitution? Let's just get it out in the open here right now for the purposes of public instruction and the purposes of informing our posterity. Which side are you on? I love this.
Yeah, because really, it's going to force a lot of people on the committee to decide which side they're on, and I suspect it'll be primarily the Democrats who support it rather than the Republicans. And that really is such a terrible tragedy, because I think, of course, what is happening is you're seeing the demise of the Republican Party. It was a grand old party at one time, but it's lost its leadership, it's lost its way. And yes, it's my personal opinion that one reason why they rigged the election in 2004, because I think John Kerry really won the election there, but first I think the one reason that they wanted George Bush as the president was because he would discredit Christianity, he would discredit the Republican Party, and certainly he would make it very, very difficult for anybody who believed in the things that you and I believe in ever to get elected again. And now we see Ron Paul coming along, and I don't look upon him as a Republican. Yeah. I look upon him as a patriot who believes in the Constitution. I think that is what is really important at this time. This is not a matter of right, left, conservative, liberal, Republican, Democrat. It's, do you believe in the Constitution or do you not believe in the Constitution? And, you know, I think there's a growing interest in the Constitution. As Jay Leno had once said recently, you know, certainly the Iraqis need a new Constitution. Why don't we send them ours? Because, of course, we don't use ours anymore. And, of course, in his own crude way, this was a very, very profound statement. I think maybe we ought to start using our Constitution, and we could let Iraq have a copy, but let's keep the original here as the law of our land, which it is. And unfortunately, we don't have very many people who believe in enforcing it, at least not in Washington, D.C.
Well, we really don't own the copyright on the principles. The principles, of course, are inscribed in our hearts by a creator. They were written on the tablets of stone by the finger of the Almighty at Sinai. They were enshrined in the 10 tables and 12 tables of the law by the Romans who studied, the Romans who wrote those principles studied what Solon had done in Athens in terms of creating a constitution for that city-state. There are elements of what we inherited in all of these documents, all these principles. They all, of course, begin with the revelation of the laws that our Creator wants us to live by. The Ten Commandments, the two great commandments articulated in the New Testament are very important to this. The golden text of the Book of Micah in the Old Testament, of course, we go through the development of the corpus of Western Christian thought all the way up to 1215 at Runnymede with the Magna Carta. And right now in our country, in spite of the fact that we are the heirs of this incredible tradition, this incredible legacy of understanding the principles of freedom and dignity of the individual as decreed by our Creator, we're at a point right now where the government that rules us is literally trying to repeal not only the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, but everything that the Western Christian tradition and the Anglo-Saxon common law corpus has accomplished since 1215. Our incumbent government wants to take us back to a pre-medieval understanding of the powers of government and the lack of standing of the individual before the state. And this is all being done, as you said, under the reign of somebody who's a putative Christian. And as Mr. Bush's recent remarks about the supposed congruence and identity of the concept of God between Muslims, Christians, Jews, and others illustrate, Mr. Bush really, in terms of his practice and perception, shouldn't be considered a Christian. He's a universalist. And he's perfectly entitled to be a universalist. It's just, I think, intellectual and theological consumer fraud to call himself a Christian when he would say, for instance, that Muslims and Christians worship the same God, and presumably Hindus, Muslims, and Christians worship the same God, followers of Ahura Mazda or whoever. You know, I'm not trying to denigrate people who follow a different religious belief, although I, as a Christian, sincerely am convicted that there is only one way that we will reach happiness in heaven with our Creator, and that is through Jesus Christ, our Lord. I'm not trying to denigrate the worth of people who are in other religions by saying that, no, we do not worship the same God. That's pretty basic to an understanding, I think, of the Western tradition. That having been said, Bush's real God is the state. And he's firmly in a tradition here of extolling the supposed salvific influence of the state in the affairs of man. He gave a perfectly abhorrent State of the Union address several years ago where he adulterated, as a speechwriter, adulterated that wonderful Christian hymn, Power in the Blood, the chorus of which is, there's power, wonder-working power in the precious blood of the Lamb. And Bush, I'm paraphrasing here, had it rewritten to say there's power, wonder-working power in the goodness of the American people, which, of course, is humanism. It's a collectivist perspective. It's rooted in the worship of collective human power as channeled through the ruling elite of the state. You know, that's the vision that Jean-Jacques Rousseau wrote about in The Social Contract, of what he called the worship of the state as God. That's not the phrase he used, but that's the concept, this concept of the civil religion or civic religion that Rousseau articulated, the ruling doctrine of the French Revolution. You know, that was the gospel that led them to feed the guillotines in the French Revolution. And in the 19th century, of course, Hegel came along and said that the state was the manifestation of God's will in the world, which is really good news for Hegelians of both the Marxist and National Socialist varieties. And Bush is somebody who adheres to that belief in his own dim-witted way. He's somebody who I don't think has ever cracked the cover on any of the relevant books, but absorbed from his father, who is a much brighter man, the fundamental tenets of this belief in the state as God. And so when he says that I'm confident that God speaks through me, what Bush is saying is that he is basically the vicar, the avatar, the pontifex maximus, if you will, of this ruling deity called the state. And that's the biggest difference I can think of between Ron Paul and practically everybody else in public life in the position of political influence and importance right now, is that Ron Paul actually understands that the state isn't God, that our creator, God, gave us our liberties, and that the only excuse for having an entity called government is to protect that which God gave us. And it's a wonderfully important distinction that sets him apart from the rest of the pack, and it's a glorious thing to see in practice.
And, of course, the whole idea was that liberty and limited government were synonymous.
Exactly.
And that tyranny and totally government were synonymous. And there are some people who want freedom and a limited government. There are others who want, of course, to be the rulers over the masses. They're so much smarter than the rest of us. And unfortunately, we find many of these people in positions of power today. And they're using, of course, the threat of international terrorism, which is incidentally being financed by our good friends, the Saudis and the Pakistanis. Mm-hmm. They're using that threat to take away the freedom of the American people. When are we going to wake up our guests? This evening, William Grigg will be back in a moment to wrap up the program. Well, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up your thoughts there, William.
When people ask me what religion I adhere to, I say, I'm a Christian who attends worship services at a Baptist church. And I think that the way we ought to approach the effort to defend or to restore our liberties would partake of a similar sensibility. Rather than saying that Ron Paul is a Republican, you could say Ron Paul is a patriot who's running as a Republican, who has been elected as a Republican to the House of Representatives. That's the perspective on patriotism that our founding generation subscribed to. That's why George Washington spoke very passionately about the evil of party politics. And I think that if we approach each other on that basis, I'm an American citizen, I'm a patriot, I'm a lover of the Constitution, this is what we ought to do jointly to protect the liberties that we all cherish, I think we'll have a lot better prospect of success than if we allow ourselves to be assigned to these different reservations on the basis of a poll-tested and focus-grouped political talking points. And I think we're seeing an element of that here in the fact that Ron Paul's support and his appeal cross this arbitrary divide, which is a very narrow divide. There really isn't more than half a degree that separates the two branches, the two retail outlets for the same wholesale political establishment. We have to get people to understand and support this wonderful piece of legislation, H.R. 3835, the American Freedom Agenda Act of 2007, that would be a wonderful place to start in building what would be genuinely mass movement, a mass movement of patriots to restore our liberties and to throw the government back into its constitutional cage. Please get your friends, your family, all your associates, the people you work with, the people with whom you go to church, get them to look at this measure and get them to understand how important it is.
Oh, well, I think it's an exciting time. I think people, specifically even getting the entire legislation and pointing out the things that are that they're trying to do away with. Most people do not understand the implications of doing away with the right of habeas corpus. They don't understand the fact that you could be accused of being a terrorist simply by the military commission. And the military can target you, perhaps for views that you have, or for whatever reason it might be. Maybe you are an enemy of the state. I think that what we need to do is get the legislation. I'm going to pull it down tomorrow, William, and I hope to be able to use this in a talk I'm going to be giving in about a week.
Wonderful.
Anyway, God bless. Thank you so very much for being with
Thank
us.
You.
It's always
God
a pleasure. Good night. God bless. All right. Well, certainly William Grigg is certainly always one of my favorite guests. I hope our listeners across America will appreciate the wisdom of this gentleman who certainly has a vast source of information, and we'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We just want to make an announcement. Somebody had called in to announce that there's going to be a talk this coming Friday, that's the 19th, up in the Spokane Valley in Washington. and it's going to be a talk on immigration. It's going to be given at the Decades Conference Center. That's the Decades Conference Center at 10502 East Sprague Avenue in Spokane Valley in Washington, the state of Washington. It's going to cost $7 to get in, and they have a telephone number, 509-924-7056. That is 509-924-7056, and it's at 7:30 this coming Friday. So, and then, of course, I do need to let our listeners know that on the 28th of October, which is a week from Sunday, we're going to be having an all-day conference at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course here in Monterey Bay, North Shore of Monterey Bay, where I live. Beautiful time of year to come, and certainly going to be bringing outside speakers. Conference is going to begin at 8:30 in the morning, but the doors will open at 7:30, and we'll be going until about 5:30, and we're certainly Garth Nicholson will be here. Ron Brown's going to be here talking about finance, and ladies and gentlemen, if you don't understand what's happening financially, you better learn in a hurry, because we're moving into a financial crisis, and we may very well see the death of the dollar. And then, of course, we're going to have Carol Matriciana, Michael Shaw. I'll be talking. A great time. So if you can possibly make it October the 28th, why, we'd look forward to seeing you there. But you're going to have reservations. The telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you will want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, if you haven't read it, because it begins to explain that behind everything going on today, there are powerful spiritual forces, and really that we're involved in a spiritual battle being played out on the political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. And, of course, it's so vitally important that people understand that nothing is as it appears to be, and when we see things unfolding that just don't make any sense, there has to be another explanation. And you can only understand it by understanding that there is a cosmic clock, there is a cosmic timetable, there is a master plan that I think is drawing America into a expanded war in the Middle East, which really doesn't make any sense. The Central Intelligence Agency has said that Iran will not be able to have enough nuclear material to build a nuclear bomb for 5 to 10 years. So why the urgency at this time to go to war with Iran? Very simply, there is a master plan behind everything going on. And, of course, as we do draw ourselves into a war with Iran, well, of course, when you start a war, you never know how it's going to end, and I fear it's going to end very badly. I believe it's going, of course, to end up probably down the line with ever more police state controls here in the United States. It may very well end up with the drafting of our sons and daughters to be used as cannon fodders for a massive war in the Middle East. I think there will be terrible complications here at home as we move into a period of chaos and crisis. And who knows, we may very well see in American cities what I saw in Europe at the end of the Second World War. And that, as far as you can see, is nothing but rubble. Understand, ladies and gentlemen, that we are moving into a world conflict, and we're being drawn there because the good people are not speaking out and saying, this is all unconstitutional. Why are we funding the Saudi Arabians and the Pakistanis that are funding the world terrorist movement? And after all, the attack on the World Trade Center was 15 Saudi Arabians, of course, and then, of course, supposedly headed by Osama bin Laden, who was a Saudi Arabian. His family lives in Saudi Arabia, and his family was here in the United States at that time and got very preferred treatment. Lots of unanswered questions, and we need to begin asking really what's going on. Our number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for America, pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection, because we are on the front lines of this truly spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking a beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guest. And for this next hour, it's going to be our good friend Ralph Epperson. And of course, we have Ralph on from time to time. Ralph is one of the few people who knows a lot more about Masonry than I do. He's been studying this for many years and has read many of the major books dealing with Masonry, and most people really do not understand the implications of having a secret society with millions, several million people here in the United States. Because when you first enter the craft, why, you're sworn to support your fellow members of the craft, and certainly if there's a judicial situation, you go to court against a Mason. And the judge is a Mason, why, you're going to lose that court case. Or certainly if you are, somebody is on the jury. He is not going to be doing what's right and upholding his obligation as a jury. Because, of course, this loyalty to Masonry supersedes that of being an American citizen. After all, he has sworn the terrible oaths when he joined this fraternity, and, of course, when he asked for the light to come into his life, why, of course, he was really asking whether he realized it or not. And certainly, I doubt that any of the Masons, when they are first inducted into the Blue Lodge, understand that the light is the light of Lucifer. But you cannot be a born-again Christian and believe in the divinity of Jesus Christ and of course, also believe in the great architect of the universe. And this is the problem that we have. And, of course, when we have people working within government structures, they will always tend to favor the people who are members of the craft. And, of course, if you are working in a division of government and their choice between you and somebody else and you're a Mason, why, you're going to get the nod. Or if your other fellow's a Mason, you're not, why, he's going to get the promotion. And this is true in the military, it's true in the police force, it's true within every branch of government. You cannot have a free society when you have a secret society with millions of members there. And we've seen this over and over again, say with the Supreme Court appointments by Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Harry Truman, both were Masons. And they packed the Supreme Court with Masons, so that between 1941 and 1971, the Masons controlled the United States Supreme Court and took God and prayer out of our schools. Well, with that as a background, let's get to our special guest. But one reason that they took God and prayer out of our schools is because the Masons worship a different God. And they've always, of course, wanted to change America from being a Christian nation or a Judeo-Christian nation to become a secular nation, and then eventually, of course, to merge this into their vision of what this new one-world order would be. Ralph, thank you so very much for being with us this evening.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me, Dr. Stan. It's always a pleasure.
My producer said you wanted to talk about a couple of items, so what would you like to talk about this evening?
If you don't mind, Dr. Stan, just a couple of things. There were a couple of pieces of good news, I thought, that were in my newspaper last night. There's a little boy named Ben who died in 2002, 2 years old, and his parents, together with volunteers, hang out a string that's got a message on the top printed, and then there's a little red butterfly on one string, and then you keep going down the string, there's a little green bird in the heart, and then at the bottom of it is a bell, and they call it Ben's Bell. And they leave these all over the city with the reminder, according to the article, quote, that every act of kindness creates a ripple with no logical end.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. All right, Ralph, go right ahead.
Oh, and, okay, the little tag on the top of the bell that they hang around just anywhere, and people are encouraged to take it home with them, is a memorial to their young son, Ben, who died at the age of two in 2002. It says, quote, every act of kindness creates a ripple with no logical end and includes directions to spread kindness throughout our world. With all of the wars and rumors of wars and threats, everything else, and murder and bombs going off, I thought it was kind of a nice little story. There's a second one on the third page of my evening paper I thought would be kind of interesting. You know what silly string is, Dr. Stan?
The silly string? No, I don't.
It's an aerosol can that you spray, you know, like press down on getting hairspray, and it shoots a stream of kind of sticky stuff. I guess it's loose. It flies through the air, but it's like a string, except it's made out of plastic or something. And then you can keep shooting, and it you can make cobwebs and everything else out of it. So the clever people in Iraq discovered they could use silly string to determine whether there was a booby trap with lines in front of them, meaning they'd walk into a building and shoot this silly string out, and if it stuck in the air, they couldn't see the line, they knew there was quite possibly a booby trap, which was you wouldn't see it, you'd walk through it, and you'd push against it or break it, and it would set off a bomb. So they're using silly string to find booby traps when our American troops go out. And there was a lady in New Jersey that decided apparently to raise money for them and sent 80,000 cans of silly string to Iraq. I thought it was just a neat story.
No, I think it really is. And, of course, there's so many good people in America, and so we often talk about all the bad things, and there are a lot of bad things, but overall, we have still have the greatest country in the world. We have the greatest form of government in the world. If we would only begin to implement and use that form of government rather than abandoning it. And by abandoning it, not being involved, believe me, the people on the other side are involved. They have an agenda. They work full-time to destroy what was once the land of the free and the home of the brave.
Can I get into one last thing, and then we'll talk about the Masons if you wish. But
right ahead.
I want to give your listeners a way to counter Hillary Clinton's argument that we need to get into socialized medicine.
All right, fine. Well, let's hold just a moment, and why don't we wait until we have all of our stations back on board, and then we can talk about why you disagree with Hillary Clinton. Now, of course, we can't support or detract from a political candidate, but of course, if you want to comment on Hillary and her drive for socialized medicine, go right ahead.
Okay, you say I can do that now?
You go right ahead.
Okay. Article 6, Section 1 of the Constitution says that the Constitution is the supreme law of the land, which means that any law made in violation of the Constitution is null and void. It has no force and effect, automatically. All you got to do, in fact, there's no obligation to obey it, but if you get into court, you just prove the Constitution doesn't give them that power, and the game is over if you get a good judge. But let me tell you, let's finish the story. I want to go to the 10th Amendment and read what it says, and then we're going to talk about where this power to do this, according to if Hillary's going to support the Constitution. It says, the 10th Amendment reads, quote, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. Notice it says delegated powers. If they aren't delegated, they don't have it. So then you go to Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, and you'll read what those delegated powers are. There's only 18 of them. And you list such things as creating a post office, raising an army, naturalization, coining money, punishing piracy, raising an army, etc. Now, if anyone in this world can find in Article 1, Section 8, the power to legislate in the socialized or medical insurance business or medical insurance in any way, they're better off than I am, because I can't find it, which means it's not been delegated. If it's not delegated, Hillary Clinton, who's going to be our next president, has no power to do this, according to the Constitution, and she's going to take an oath to support, protect, and defend the Constitution. That means Hillary ain't got it. show me, and I'm asking from now on, any politician that stands up and says, I'm in favor of doing this, said, you say to them, the Tenth Amendment says you've got to have delegated powers. Show me the delegated power. Show me.
Well, it's, of course, Ralph, what the problem is that most people don't understand the Constitution. They've never been taught the Constitution. They do not understand that the Constitution is a restrictive covenant that limits the power of what the federal government can do, because our founding fathers knew that a government that could provide whatever the people wanted would be able to control the people from the cradle to the grave. So they only wanted the federal government to do a very, very few things, and that, of course, is laid out in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution.
Yes.
And I agree with you totally. There is no justification for socialized medicine, but there was no justification for Medicare or for Medicaid or for almost 90% of what the federal government is doing today.
That's
and what
right.
we need to do, of course, is train people about our amazing form of government and the fact that everything that is going on today is in violation of the Constitution, because there really are people who want a dictatorship in America. And they have forgotten, of course, that adage, and I use this in the last hour, but certainly it deserves to be repeated. Thomas Jefferson's wonderful statement in matters of politics, speak not to me of confidence in men, but bind them down for mischief with the chains of the Constitution. And, of course, this was the idea that had been put forward 100 years earlier by John Locke, that government governs best, that governs the least. Keep government out of people's lives so they can be free. Hillary doesn't want that. She wants to control medical care, because if you control medical care, you control the people. Go right ahead.
Okay, Dr. Stan, here's my point. I've said this for 40 years. All of us who are concerned about this are teachers. We are educators. We are the faculty of the world's largest university. Every building in the United States is a building on our campus. Everybody who lives here is a student. We have to become teachers. So I'm asking you and your listeners, from now on, when you find a politician who says, I'm in favor of so and so, pull out your copy of the Constitution and read it publicly, or at least do the best you can to get others to listen to you and say, listen, the Constitution says you've got to have a delegated power. If you don't have it, you don't have the power, which means show me the delegated power. And they can't do it. We can convince the people if we educate them. We're all teachers. And I'm suggesting the way to do this is in public meetings. They show Hillary and these other candidates running around in public meetings, and people are stopping to ask them questions. Ask them this question. Where is the delegated power in the Constitution for socialized medicine? Where is it for the space race? Where is it for aid to education? Anything that this bill that they're talking about with some sort of access program for young children or something, where in the Constitution can you support that? Where's the delegated power?
And I agree with you totally, Ralph, but I dare very much doubt that you'll get onto television and have the opportunity to ask Hillary that question, because the last thing they want the American people to know is that most of our politicians today are basically violating their oath of office to defend our Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. In fact, I would suggest that probably well over 400 of our congressmen in Washington, D.C., are domestic enemies of our Constitution, because they consistently vote for unconstitutional measures. And there are very, very few people back there who really stand solidly on what the Constitution says. In fact, most of our congressmen don't understand the Constitution. In fact, when the current congressman from my district was asked some years ago how many articles there were in the Constitution, he hesitated and said, 27?
27.
Well, of course, for our listeners out there, that's the amendment. He didn't know the difference between an amendment and an article.
Well, this is our
this man has been back in Washington, D.C. for many years. What we should do is, before anyone can even go into Congress, they should take a six-week course and learn the Constitution and understand what a magnificent document it really is.
I'm just suggesting this, Dr. Stan. Every chance we have to meet our congressman or congresswoman or senator, we should take advantage of it. And if we can get a public forum, like our congressman used to come to Tucson and have a public meeting, there were maybe 100 people there. And I used to stand way in the back and ask my question very loudly, very directly, and very to the point. And I would generally ask that question: where in the Constitution is the power to, that you believe you have to do this program, whatever it was he was just advocating? Where's the delegated power? Remember that phrase. Where is the delegated power? If it's not delegated, you don't have it. That completely eliminates Hillary Clinton's program. You can't do it. And the only way we've got to, if we're going to try to save this country, is just get back to the fundamentals, the Constitution of the United States. It's very easy to do.
I agree with you totally. In fact, this is why we, every single month, put on the representative of the Institute on the Constitution on Radio Liberty, Pastor David Whitney, and we have him on every one of the various networks we have, in an effort to rekindle within the American people an understanding of the Constitution, a desire to know the Constitution, and a dedication to its principles. And I agree with you totally. And what's really exciting, although certainly the media doesn't want you to know, is that in every one of our states today, there are classes being put on by little people in their homes or in their churches or in meeting halls, where people are once again learning about this wonderful document, which is the very foundation of our freedom.
Good. Thank you. I think that's amazing. I'm pleased to hear that, and I would encourage... You can carry the Constitution in your shirt pocket, the whole thing. It's like 30 pages long and 3x5 cards. You can slip it in your pocket and carry one with you. You can show... And the Constitution says, no, we've got the power to do that. And I said, okay, show me where. I've got it in front of me. Is it, are you claiming it's part... This medical insurance is part of the power to create a post office? Or raise an army, or coin money. That's it. Those are the only powers Congress has. And the Tenth Amendment says if you don't have the delegated power, you don't have it. And we're losing this argument, and we're not educating. And I'm saying that's the only question. We can win every argument by referring back to the Constitution. If we just get back, abortion, where's the power for the federal government to permit abortion when the Constitution guarantees our right to life, liberty, and property? There is no... Back to the Constitution. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to get on my soapbox, Dr. Stan.
All right, fine. Well, I think we have to understand that we have a real problem in America because we have a form of government and very, very few people understand it. They do not understand that there are restrictions in the Constitution, that the Bill of Rights is basically a restrictive covenant that limits what the federal government can do, or at least, when it did not specifically talk about the federal government, it's talking about local governments. And the First Amendment says, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, nor prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Congress, it only dealt with Congress. And of course we had to have a Masonic court that somewhere was able to twist the meaning of those words, and the Masons controlled the Supreme Court. And they wanted to destroy the religious foundation and morality of our nation. And the Masonic judges who controlled the Supreme Court in 1962 are the ones, of course, who took God and prayer out of our schools, knowing full well it would eventually lead to moral anarchy as we began moving into a chaos and crisis. And the fact that most people do not know that it was the Masonic Court that was, of course, instituted by 32nd degree Franklin Delano Roosevelt and 33rd degree Harry Truman, that took God and prayer out of our schools. The fact that our ministers won't tell us, our political leaders won't tell us, Rush Limbaugh won't tell us, why, of course, the reason is, that they don't want the American people to understand. We do have secret societies, of which Masonry is only one. But all of the secret societies, whether it be Skull and Bones, Bohemian Grove, or whether it be Masonry, whether it be the CFR, which came out of a secret society, it is a front for a secret society, all of these have an occult foundation dedicated to a new world order and a new world religion. Well, our guest this evening is Ralph Epperson. Ralph, let's talk a little bit about why we should be concerned about having secret societies in a society. Can you have a free society when you have secret societies with people at the highest levels of our government whose loyalty is not to our Constitution, but to the society they've sworn their oaths to?
No, of course not, Dr. Stanton. That's the point. And Bill Clinton told us that in 1992 on National Television Live when he accepted the Democratic nomination, or the Democrat Party nomination for the presidency. He said it in a speech he delivered to when he accepted the nomination, and that speech has been recorded in his book called Putting People First, starting on pages 217, and in there he admits that he was part of a secret conspiracy that made him president of the United States, that controlled both parties equally, controlled communism, worldwide communism, and actually financed both sides of World War II.
You have that that page handy there. I don't have the exact quotation. I know that certainly on that speech you're speaking of, that was on the 14th of July, as I remember, of 1992, where he talked about his relationship to Professor Quigley and his relationship to President Kennedy. What did he basically say about this secret society?
Well, he identified it. He named names. He called it the Royal Institute of International Affairs, primarily English. He called it the Anglophile Network, which means that he was admitting that it was primarily English, and he names the names of the people that were involved.
Would you mind, I would really appreciate it if you could maybe copy that page and get it to me. I would love to see it. That's Putting People First?
Say it again?
What was the title of the book?
That's the name of... Duxton, I just said it, now it's gone blank.
I thought you said putting people first.
Yes. I will send you that. It's a transcript of the entire speech, and later on, it starts on page 217. On page 231, he actually says that two men got him into politics. One was John Kennedy, and the other was Dr. Carroll Quigley. But there's really even more to the story that he didn't talk about. Bill Clinton was a native of Arkansas, Hope, Arkansas, a small little town, and he grew up in Arkansas with a senator named Senator William J. Fulbright. And William J. Fulbright was his real first mentor, and I'm really surprised he didn't mention him, because Fulbright is the one that said, you want to get into politics, here's the way to do it.
Well, Fulbright, of course, was a Rhodes... Was he a Rhodes Scholar? I think
yes,
he was.
Yes, that's where I was going, Dr. Stan. Let me just get my point made. I believe that Bill Clinton got to meet Senator Fulbright, and they talked and said, here's the way that you can become president of the United States, or at least get into politics. He said, you need to go to Georgetown University, where you can be taught by Dr. Carroll Quigley, which means that William Fulbright knew Dr. Quigley. And then he said, after you get through with your 4 years of college, you are to go to a Rhodes Scholarship, get a Rhodes Scholarship, and go to Oxford, where you'll be taught by Cecil Rhodes. And then after you get back from your 2 years in Oxford under a Rhodes Scholarship, where you've learned more about this conspiracy from them, the people who actually are supporters of it, then you join the Council on Foreign Relations, which was created by the Royal Institute of International Affairs. Now, Quigley pointed out in his book that we know that Bill Clinton read, it was required reading for his classes, and Professor Quigley, the man he praised...
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Ralph Epperson. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Ralph is telling about the relationship between William Jefferson Clinton and Senator Fulbright. Senator Fulbright was the United States Senator from Arkansas when Bill Clinton was a young man, and of course, Senator Fulbright was a Rhodes Scholar, and he understood who really rules the world. And, of course, a lot of this really centers around Oxford University, the secret society that Cecil Rhodes created many, many years ago, actually back in 1891. But certainly Cecil Rhodes' influence is tremendous at Oxford today. And even though he's long since dead, he is probably the most influential man in the world today. In fact, if you go to the Rhodes Memorial there in Cape Town, South Africa, you'll find a bust of Cecil Rhodes, and inscribed in stone under the bust is this phrase: "The immense and brooding spirit still shall quicken and control. Living he was the land, and dead his soul shall be her soul." And the phrase to quicken means to come to life. And Cecil Rhodes, even though he's died in 1902, he's been dead for 105 years. His influence is guiding what's going on in America and in Great Britain today. Go ahead, pick up the story there, Rob.
You're right. And he was also, Mr. Senator Fulbright was also a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. So Bill Clinton went, according to the outline given to him by Senator Fulbright, went to Oxford, went to Georgetown, met Professor Quigley, took classes from him, read the book Tragedy and Hope, learned about this conspiracy, read the names, then went to Oxford, where one of the conspirators named in Dr. Quigley's book, Cecil Rhodes, created the Rhodes Scholarship. He studied there, and then he came back, and a few years later, he joined the Council on Foreign Relations, and then, isn't that interesting, became President of the United States. In other words, this man, this plan could make you president if you followed it. And little Billy Clinton followed it and became president. Now, once you understand that, then suddenly the rest of what's happening in this world starts to make sense. There is a conspiracy, and guess who told us that? Bill Clinton himself. Hillary accused the vast right-wing conspiracy of trying to foible her plans for and her husband's plans for this nation, and yet at the same time that was going on, they both knew about the vast left-wing conspiracy. And Dr. Quigley told him in his book that this conspiracy controlled both parties equally. That means we have no choice. They select two, and we elect one. That means we pick one of their two candidates, and they don't care which one wins. However, in the case of Hillary, they do care. They promised her that the election, I believe, back in the 1990s, when Bill Clinton was first elected. And Hillary said, I want to be the first president, so stick around, stick with your philandering husband, and we'll make you president in the year 2008.
Well, it'll be very interesting to see how the election goes, but certainly behind everything that's going on are these powerful secret societies. Now, what most people do not understand is that both Cecil Rhodes and his right-hand man, Lord Milner, were Masons who had sworn the oaths to the great architect of the universe. And certainly the people who joined the secret society that Cecil Rhodes came largely from the Society for Psychical Research, which was a modern-day reflection of the Templars. And, of course, the Knights Templar, dating back to 1118, when they were formed there on the Holy Mount in Israel. The Knights Templar had been underground for many years, but they were manifested, certainly, in the 1890s and the early part of the 20th century, in the secret society known as the Association of Helpers, created by Cecil Rhodes. So you see the occult influence behind this movement. Masonic, Templar, but then, of course, if you join the Scottish Rite branch of the Masons, you go through the Rite of the Templars and the Rosicrucians, because, of course, modern-day Masonry is simply a modern-day manifestation of the ancient mystery religions. And that is, of course, what the Rosicrucians are about. That's what the Templars are about. That's what the Gnostics and the Kabbalists are. But then most people have no idea how this all fits together, because you're certainly never going to get this from other sources. And you're going to think, of course, we have a two-party system, Democrats and Republicans, without understanding that behind both of them are powerful spirits and forces. Go ahead there, Ralph. Hold on, I think we're going to have to take a quick break here, and then when we get back, we'll let you pick up the story. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Ralph Everson. Go right ahead, Ralph.
Well, you're very kind, Dr. Stan. You're right. Mr. Rhodes was a member of the Masonic Lodge, and we've got to study the Masonic Lodge to understand the way that this country's going, because one of their members, one of their proud members, one of their best members, their writers, a writer by the name of Manly P. Hall, wrote that America had a secret destiny. And people say, that's impossible. We don't have that. Everybody knows we, the people, run our government. No, we had a secret destiny, and that secret destiny was created by our founding fathers, and the proof of that is on the back of the dollar bill, and the majority of our founding fathers were, guess what, members of the Masonic Lodge. And so I think we need to study more about the Masons and learn what role they play. Now, there could very well be Masons listening right now who are saying, wait a minute, Ralph, I don't know what you're talking about. I've never heard this before. And you're certainly wrong, and I'm urging you, if you're a Mason or even connected to the Masons, like if you're a wife of a Mason or a daughter or an uncle or somebody, please find out that we're telling you the truth. There's something going on inside the Masonic Lodge.
Well, I think, of course, Manly P. Hall, writing in the Lectures on Ancient Philosophy, explained what Masonry is about, and certainly when Manly P. Hall died, he was cited by the Scottish Rite magazine as the, what was it, the greatest or most influential Masonic writer or philosopher of all time. But, of course, Manly P. Hall said that Masonry is a fraternity within a fraternity. An outer fraternity of men who are there to do good and have good meetings and lots of fun and help the community, but an inner fraternity where, of course, the men are dedicated to the study of the Arcanum and the Ancanorum. And if you don't recognize those terms, don't be surprised, because I didn't recognize them, and I had to get the dictionary out when I read Manly P. Hall's writings. What they're talking about is the secret. And the secret of secrets. And what is the secret of secrets? Well, that's the secret that's been passed down for 5,000 years by the mystery religions and by the secret societies. And of course, we cover that in our talk on the forbidden secret. But pick this story up there, Ralph.
Well, there's really one secret which leads to the ultimate secret. And the first secret is that, and you and I, we both have tried to prove this with their own literature, and the first is that the great architect of the universe, the one that they pray to, the one that they sing to, the one that they acknowledge as their God, is in fact Lucifer, Satan, the devil. And I know if there's Masons listening right now, they're saying, yes, absolutely impossible. I've been a Mason for 30 years. I've never heard that before.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here, Ralph. Here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Ralph Emerson. And before we go on with our discussion of the Masonic Secret Society, which, of course, has had a terrible effect on America through the years. But before we get into that, Ralph, I'd like you to get your website out. I would like you to get your telephone number out so people would know how to reach you.
Well, you're very kind, Dr. Stan. Thank you very much. I have a website, and if you wish to go there and browse through some of 30 or 40 items I've got for sale in my website, I encourage you to go there. Just, if nothing else, just to browse and read. It's Ralph, R-A-L-P-H, and then there's a dash. No space, just a dash, and then Epperson. Ralph-Epperson with two P's. E-P-P-E-R-S-O-N. P as in Peter, .com. Ralph-Epperson.com. And if you want to talk to me and feel, for some reason, you want to discuss something with me or even challenge me, or if you're a Mason and want to know more, or if you're a Mason and want to challenge what I'm saying, call me at 800-422-3888. That's an 800 number, toll-free, 800-422-3888. It's 9:30 here. We're in the same time as California. Of course, we're in the Mountain Standard, but we don't go on daylight savings, so call me tomorrow during the day, if you will, or even night, but early. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, what we're trying to point out is that we need to know more about the Masonic Lodge. If we don't know about the Masonic Lodge, we don't know American history. They were major players in setting this nation up, and the greatest evidence of that is on the back of our dollar bill. It's very easy to prove. All you got to do is find out what those symbols mean. And the first question I love to ask when we talk about the symbols and the seals and the circles and everything else is, why don't we as Americans know what those things mean? How come? This is our money. Well, it's not really our money, but we carry it. We spend it. You can borrow it, loan it, whatever. It's our money, but we don't know what those symbols mean. I want to know why. And I think the reason is because Manly P. Hall said our secret destiny was concealed in those symbols. So once once we find out what's in those symbols, we'll understand why we're going the way we're going. It's scary, but it's like knowing the truth finally will make enormous sense, and it'll relieve this apprehension. You'll understand what's happening in this nation.
Well, I would hope that everybody would get out a dollar bill and look at the back. And then, of course, you see the pyramid capped by the all-seeing eye, the triangle, glorified eye, and then, of course, the capstone is floating over the top of the pyramid. Now, why isn't it in place on the top of the pyramid? Why? Because, of course, it will not settle in place until the job is done. And what is the job? What's the purpose? What's the goal? The establishment of the Novo Ordo Seclorum, the world government. That is the stated objective. Now, the glorified eye on the top is a symbol of the ancient mystery religions, and it's been around for 5,000 years. Some people say 6,000 years. But, of course, you can get in the background of that glorified eye in the triangle. Why is it on the back of the dollar bill? Why, very simply, it symbolizes that the foundation of America, and, of course, that was actually on the back of the Great Seal of the United States. It was put there in 1782. It was hidden. It was hidden on the back of the Great Seal of the United States because they did not want the American people, and certainly not the Christians, to understand that there were people working within the United States government at the highest levels who were dedicated to the goal of the ancient mystery religions. And what was that goal? It was to bring about a world government. And Ralph was talking about Manly P. Hall. And in fact, he had written a book called The Secret Destiny. And we actually carry that book. You won't find it listed in our catalog. You won't find it listed in our webpage, at radioliberty.com. But if you request The Secret Destiny of America, we do carry it. Why do we list it? Because it's a satanic book, and we don't want people to think we approve of it. It's there, though, for researchers, and there the whole plan is laid out. The fact that for 3,000 years, why there have been secret societies working to bring about a world democratic society, nations, democracies, which would move and work towards this world government. Why do you think, of course, the president keeps talking about the fact that we want to bring democracy to Iraq when America is not a democracy, we're a republic? I would think we'd want to give them a free society, not a democracy, which has always been the plan of the ancient mystery religions. Or is that why we're really there? Are we really there carrying out this ancient plan of the secret societies? And as Ralph pointed out, it has been around for at least 3,000 years. Secret societies working about to bring about world democracy, and that's why they keep talking about America as a democracy. No, we're not. We're a republic. But, of course, most Americans don't even know the difference, do they, Ralph?
No, that's correct. It's one of the first things I covered in my book, The Unseen Hand, which, by the way, is available at my website, and I would urge you to get a copy. And I believe you can buy it from Dr. Stan, and it's called The Unseen Hand. Please read that. There's a lot of basic information about the conspiratorial view of history, which Dr. Stan and I are talking about. There's something going on, and once you know what it is, history makes enormous sense. That's the whole reason Dr. Stan and I do this. We're trying to get people to be aware of where we're going and why. It's not pleasant, but knowing somehow makes it not pleasant, but at least you can tolerate and understand it. That's what we're trying to do.
Agreed, and so you've been out for a good long while. And I think it's vitally important that people begin to ask why. I mean, there's so many things that go on that just don't make sense until you understand that there is a plan, there is a master plan there, but the last thing they want is for the American people to realize that the military and financial power of the United States is being used to bring about a world government. We have troops stationed in 130 nations today. The United States has troops in 130 nations today. We continue occupying Germany, Over 60 years after the Second World War ended, why do we still have our troops in Germany? We continue occupying Japan 60 years after the Second World War ended. We have our troops occupying South Korea 50 years after the Korean War ended. Why are the troops still there? Are they there to protect them, those countries, against communism? Well, they've told us communism is dead, no longer a threat. We're the lone superpower. Why do we have troops all over the world? Because the whole idea is the American empire will eventually, of course, lead to this world government. But it will not be an American government. It will be the government that is created by the secret societies that are using America's wealth and power to bring about this. And the fact that most Americans have never heard of that, most Americans don't even understand that we've spent more money on our military than all the rest of the countries in the world put together. We spend more money on our military than all the rest of the countries in the world put together. Why do the American people have to pay such high taxes? Why to finance the military? And why do we need the military? Not to oppose communism. We financed it since its inception, and we're still financing both Russia and communist China today. But, of course, we want, of course, to have an enemy, so the American people will feel we have to back our government, and if we don't back our government, why, of course, we're unpatriotic. Well, I back our government, but unfortunately, it is not our government that's in control. It is their government, the government of the secret societies, which are there in violation of our Constitution. And these people are traitors to America because their goal is not to maintain our sovereignty, that it emerges into the one world order, the one world religion, under the one world leader. Go ahead there, Ralph.
You're absolutely right, Dr. Sand. Dr. Quigley pointed out that this thing is primarily, the way they operate it is through the central banks. And America had got a central bank in 1913 called the Federal Reserve. Of course, it's not federal. I call it what it is. It's the private. It's not even reserve, but that's a better phrase than federal because it's not federally owned. It's not controlled. It's not even controlled by the government. They might nominate approve the nomination of the president for the private reserve chairman, but that's it. There's no control from that point on. In fact, in my earlier lectures, I used to use the words of the presidents at the time about the independent Federal Reserve. There's no control over it. Whatever the chairman of the private reserve says is what this nation is going to do, it does. And there's no question. They control it through the money. Now, notice this. Hillary Clinton's offering us a new program, for some sort of program about medical care for everybody. Is that going to cost us a lot of money, you think? If it does, then we don't, and not getting more income taxes, then they need to borrow money from whom? The central bank, the private reserve. Which means the purpose of government today is to find ways to spend money. Every new proposition, every new proposal always costs more money. And if it costs more money, that increases the opportunity for debt. We borrow from the private reserve. That increases the opportunity for interest on that debt. And secondly, the private reserve creates money out of nothing, which is something that you and I, if I did that, you and I did that, Dr. Stan, we'd go to jail for counterfeiting. But the private reserve does it all the time. It's called funding the national debt. They loan the money to the government at interest, and now I saw someplace where the national debt is now up to $8 trillion. Is that true, Dr. Stan? Do you have any?
Well, actually, the national debt was, the ceiling was $8.9 trillion, and we passed that. So now it's been extended to $9.8 trillion. But we are certainly very close to a $9 trillion deficit at the present time, national debt, right?
Okay, now, here's the point, Dr. Stan. Every penny of that $9 trillion is owed to the private reserve at interest, and that means we're going to pay them back plus interest. Now, one of the things that Abraham Lincoln did was just print the paper money without borrowing it. Why don't we do that? Why do we have to borrow it from the private reserve? Because the private reserve charges us interest. When Lincoln printed the money called the greenback to pay for the cost of Civil War, it was not borrowed. He did not have to pay interest on it. And guess what happened to to President Lincoln? He was assassinated by the European bankers by John Wilkes Booth, who was a member of the Knights of the Golden Circle, which was created by the European bankers in 1837 to start a civil war, which started in 1861, 24 years later. Isn't that interesting? John Kennedy issued money that was not borrowed. They were called U.S. banknotes. I have one that someone saved, I guess, and sold it to me years ago. I've got it just in my files to show you what it looks like. It was not borrowed. What happened to John Kennedy? He went to Dallas and didn't come back for some strange reason. In other words, you don't tamper with the money power. Yes, you do. If you're the money power, you want ways to find more spending. At all costs, spend more money. And that's what Hillary's program's going to do. That's what all this border control thing is to do. We're spending trillions of dollars or billions, wherever it is. We don't even have the fence up. We're not going to build the fence up. Now there are stories coming out. There was a story about the Parkland Hospital, $72 million in free benefits, and they're going bankrupt. They can't afford it, which means they might very well have to shut the hospital down. Well, wait a minute. What are we going to do about these poor people that come across the border that don't have medical insurance? They have something like 200,000 babies born every day in Parkland Hospital. I'm sorry, 2,000. I've forgotten now. But anyway, I do remember this. 80% of the children born in Parkland Hospital, and they're increasing it every year, are born by, given birth to by illegal alien mothers. And there's no money for that. Who's going to pay for that? Now, you talk about raising the cost of medical insurance. Who's going to pay for it? We, the people. Someone's got to get paid. You know, when the hospital buys a new piece of equipment, they got to make a contract to pay it back. And when they do that, they supposedly will get the revenues from us, the people that go there to visit the hospital, to pay for it. Well, if the revenues go down, they still got to pay for the equipment. How are they going to do that? They're going to borrow the money or get it from the government, and that costs us, guess what? More money. That's the whole purpose of government, is to find ways today to waste money. Find ways to spend it, throw it away. There's never an accounting. There was an article in the paper, something like $14 billion of waste in Katrina, fraud and waste. No one's going to find out what happened to that money. Because we're a wealthy nation. We can afford this. I'm telling you, Dr. Stan, once you understand what the money power is and what these secret societies are doing, American history starts to make some sense.
Well, I think that people have to really understand that there really are, of course, even behind the central banks, secret societies. There's a powerful spiritual component to this whole world monetary system. And for those of you who haven't seen my little pamphlet on the history of money, why we begin to touch on that, and we touch on that in my talk on the financial tsunami. But behind everything going on today are spiritual forces who have one ultimate goal, and that is the destruction of the United States, and certainly the destruction of the Christian foundations, or Judeo-Christian foundations, upon which this nation was created, and replacing them with this one world government, with a different world religion. And that, of course, is the reason for the attack on God in school today, for the attack on prayer in school today, for the attack on the Ten Commandments being publicly displayed, for the attack on the nativity scenes being shown in public places. There is an intense hatred of the God of the Bible. When you understand that, when you understand that there truly is a conspiracy against God, everything going on really makes sense. And an important part of that conspiracy is Masonry. Even though many Masons may consider themselves Christians, they have sworn an oath in their desire for light, and that light which they have sworn to seek is actually Lucifer. And if you read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you read Ralph Everson's information, you'll find documentation of what we say. And the upper echelons of Masonry understand that. It's just that the average Mason has no idea, because he's been intentionally deceived. And if you read Mandy P. Hall's wonderful book, Morals and Dogma, in several areas, he actually admits we deceive those Masons who are not worthy of understanding what's really going on. Go ahead, Ralph.
He calls those people that don't see the secret ignorant. Albert Pike, the number one Mason probably of all time, calls the brothers who don't see the secret ignorant. That's not very brotherly, Dr. Stan. I would think brothers would call each other brilliant, you know. But here you got some Masons calling other Masons ignorant if they don't see the secret, which means there is a secret. We hope you can see it, but if you don't, you're stupid.
What do you think is if the average Mason really understood what this was about or why they would drop out of the lodge tomorrow? In fact, what's really so interesting is they've lost an awful lot of members, and I think the work that Ralph and others have done has begun to open the eyes of many people who've been Masons. And so basically, what are they down to, about half their previous strength?
I've heard that, yes, Dr. Stan. You know, in fact, there was a third, I think, they've lost. There's something, a million down to 3 million, something like that.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, but we cannot have a free society when we have secret societies operating openly in our nation. Well, Ralph, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. I would just say this to your listeners. I would urge them to start reading. I know sometimes it's difficult to get involved and you don't care, but I'm telling you, we've got to get busy to save this nation. There's something going on, and the thing that's going on is all covered in the back of the dollar bill. You can read that in my book, The Unseen Hand. You can watch a video called America's Secret Destiny to figure out what all those symbols mean. There's a lot more to it than we've discussed tonight, and you can start to see where we're going and why. And you can find out that it was the Masons who set this nation up. They're the ones who wrote the Constitution. They're the ones that designed the Great Seal of the United States. They're the ones that are sending us on the course we're going, the secret destiny of America, which is concealed in the back of the dollar bill. If you want to talk about this, 800-422-3888. Give me a call and let's talk.
Well, of course, lots of times the Masons will say, well, you know, really, Manly P. Hall has nothing to do with modern-day Masonry. I mean, that was, what, 135 years ago. But certainly, we don't look upon him as a real leader of Masonry. Nobody can speak for Masonry, and certainly Manly P. Hall can't speak for Masonry. How do you respond to that?
Well, that's just false, Dr. Stan. There's a statue of Albert Pike in Washington, D.C. I've seen it with my own eyes. In fact, I took pictures of it. And the plaque at the base of it says that this is our beloved Manly P. Hall, the leader of... Albert Pike, the leader of the worldwide Masonic movement. That means he was the number one Mason from 1859 to 1891. 32 years. He died in office. He's buried in the 33rd Degree Temple in Washington, D.C., and his books are still being recommended. You read them. They urge you. He wrote the rituals of all 33 degrees. And this is the man who doesn't speak for Mason. If he doesn't speak for him, who does, Dr. Stan?
Well, I think it's important for our listeners to know that today they no longer pass out the morals and dogma written by Pike because they've dumbed down so many of the Masons to the point where they can't understand it. But now they pass out a book called The Bridge to Light by Rex Hutchins. And, of course, if you read that book, they will tell you that certainly Masonry is based upon the writings of Manly P. Hall. Get a copy of The Bridge to Light and read it. And, of course, it will not tell you as much as Morals and Dogma, but if you can read Bridge to Light, then you can get Morals and Dogma. Incidentally, Ralph has a wonderful book review of Morals and Dogma he'll send out to people free if they just call what number?
800-422-3888.
One more time.
800-422-3888. 888. Call and ask for a review of Morals and Dogma, and I'll send it out free. If you want to make a donation...
Hold on, we're out of time. God bless. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Ralph, thanks very much for being with us. I guess we lost Ralph, but anyway, I hope you enjoyed our conversation. And understand that we cannot have a free society when we have secret societies working within the structure of our nation, secret societies that are dedicated to continuing this plan of the ancient mystery religions. And, of course, that's the importance of the emblem on the back of the dollar bill. And Manly P. Hall, Pike will tell you that modern-day Masonry is the continuation of the plan of the ancient mystery religions. And, of course, this is what's covered in my talk on The Forbidden Secret. If you have not seen it, I recommend it to you. and it comes with a syllabus. But you'll understand that secret has been passed down for 5,000 years through the secret societies, through the Egyptians and the Assyrians and to the Persians, and then, of course, into Babylon and the Kabbalah and the Gnosticism. It certainly was known to all of the great Greek philosophers and to Alexander the Great, and the reason for his amazing, unheralded, unparalleled success of conquering the whole known world by the time he was in his, well, let's see, he died in 22, I believe it was, and he was basically still in his 20s. An amazing, amazing story, but of course, Alexander the Great had tapped into the secret and knew the secret, and we cover that, of course, in my talk on the forbidden secret. And you should learn the secret too, but we would caution you, never try to apply the secret, because it could cost you your eternal soul. We have a four-tape set, or four-CD set, called The Secret Behind the Secret. It is an answer to Rhonda Byrne's video and book on the secret, and of course her effort to equate people with the law of attraction, that you will attract to yourself whatever, of course, you're thinking about. And if you want money, all you have to do is think about it, you can get it. And the trouble is that you may very well, but of course it can be very, very expensive in eternity. Well, let me suggest that you get the four-tape set we have on the supernatural, four-tape or four-CD set, the book Hostage to the Devil by Malachi Martin, and, of course, the four-tape set that goes with that, The Wisdom of Malachi Martin. Understand there is another dimension. There are beings which, of course, represent the other dimension, and of course, we'll introduce you in some of our writings to the Masters of Wisdom, to the Elder Brothers, to the spiritual hierarchy that rules the world. Then, of course, we want to remind our listeners that we're having an all-day seminar on the 28th of October, and it's going to be at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. We're bringing in outside speakers. We hope that you can come. Certainly, we have a lot of people who've been there in the past years, are coming back again, and new people, and we'll have speakers from across America. So if you'd like to come to the Radio Liberty to the Radio Liberty Seminar, again, the date is October 28th. Since we're serving lunch, you're going to have a reservation, and we do need to know either today or tomorrow or whether you're going to be able to make it. Again, the telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's the October 28th, a week from Sunday, annual Radio Liberty Seminar. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you, of course, will go to our website of RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. And there, of course, you can watch many of our videos. We have a whole section on Radio Liberty videos. We have another section on our radio programs. And many of our programs are archived, or they're on MP3, or they can be listened to on our live feed to our Telstar 5 satellite. And you can listen to Radio Liberty 9 hours a day. Of course, you won't get much accomplished, but we do have a live feed, and we have, of course, a recorded feed. And then, of course, we have our newsletters are up there, and we agonize over those newsletters every month, but they go back to about 1999. We hope you'll pull them down, you'll read them, and you'll reread them, and you'll challenge it and find out, could this really be true? Well, we hope that you will, and then you'll join us in this epic struggle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. It's 1-800-544-8927.